It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. British Airways announced this summer it would resume regular nonstop service to Pittsburgh International. This comes after the beginning of service to Iceland, Germany, and China. We're going to talk about the sustainability of international flights to and from Pittsburgh and the latest on the major renovation of the airport with Christina Kasotis, CEO of the Allegheny County Airport Authority. Christina Kasotis, welcome to the Confluence.
Thank you.
All right. Since you began the job about 3.5 years ago,
yes,
right, you've been on scouting, recruiting trips to bring additional international service to Pittsburgh. Where does the resumption of British Airways service to and from London rank in that recruiting checklist?
The pinnacle. We have been after British Airways since I got here. It was the first international airline that we went after, and it's because the demand to London is so great. It is the largest unserved international market we have, and it is crying out for service.
How do you do that data? How do you do that analysis that there truly is demand, not just an anecdotal story from this person and this company, et cetera?
Right. We're very lucky in the U.S. because the United States Department of Transportation collects data on passengers who want to go in between cities around the world. And so we've got very good data looking at what the demand is between Pittsburgh and London, and we can see what it was, what it is today, what it was in the old days, how people fly. In other words, it's not just because there's no nonstop service, we can see which gateways they go through, who connects through New York, who connects through Montreal, who connects wherever.
Right.
So we know that there are over 30,000 people a year who go to London, just London. That does not include Europe. And we know that when you put a nonstop service in, that typically tends to double within 2 years. So in the old days, when there was service, we had 56,000 people going between Pittsburgh and London. We have 30 today. You put service in, we'll get to 60. I'm not worried about this.
All right. So when the London flights begin in April?
Yes, April 2nd.
Mm-hmm. It'll be after a 20-year hiatus.
Yes, exactly.
Why
20 years.
Now? What has changed to make it viable now?
Everything. That's what British Airways said. This is not the market we left. Everything has changed. In their mind, and it took us 3 years to convince them of this, in their mind, Pittsburgh is a very different city with a very different travel mix that will support a flight into Heathrow. In the old days, you flew into Gatwick. There were no connecting opportunities beyond Gatwick. Zero.
Oh, okay.
Okay, zero. So now you've got Heathrow's whole hub available to you to get into continental Europe as well as India and Asia. So and Africa. So we think this is a big win. There are a number of U.S. airports that don't have Heathrow service, so this was incredibly important to have secured this slot, and we're very proud of the work and of their recognizing that Pittsburgh is a place they can succeed.
You've told us about how you measure the demand, how you assess it, and then moving forward. So if there is this increased demand for service provided by British Airways, why is it necessary to provide about $3 million in incentives to the
everybody,
airline?
Because everybody does. Unless you're New York, London, Hong Kong, or Singapore, you're providing incentives. Los Angeles provides incentives. You don't walk in with a bag of money and say, will you serve us? It doesn't work that way. What you do is you say, here's our market. Do you believe there's a market? Come see our market. Let us show you our market. And once they believe in you and they put you on the list and then they pick you, then they say, okay, what's your skin in the game?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have something. It's not about the money. This is less than 3% of the total cost of them serving the market. It'll cost them $50, $55 million a year to serve our market.
So is it similar to when this region, whether it's our elected leaders or someone else, Allegheny Conference, trying to attract a business, a company here,
sure,
and offering tax breaks, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, everybody does it. So if we showed up and said, well, we're so special that we don't need to put any skin in the game. The airlines are saying, look, we're going to put a $50 million asset into your market. How are you going to show me that you're going to make sure this gets supported? And that translates into money, and everybody offers it. So that's why we do it.
Mm-hmm. So this comes after WOW was given, I believe it was about $800,000 subsidy, and Condor about
incentive.
incentive. So tell us where the money is coming from. Is it coming out of my county property taxes?
No.
This money coming
from? There's no property tax. There's no county tax involved in the airport. There never has been, and there never will be. In our new modernization plan, we're not counting on any taxpayer money to fund it. This comes from revenue that we generate at the airport. It comes from gaming revenue that the state allocates to the airport, part of the casinos. So that's where it comes from. And it's used for economic development. That's what it's targeted for. And because bringing in air service is economic development, it's a good fit.
Mm-hmm. After the agreements are up, they could just end the service, though.
Yeah, but they don't. I mean, no airline goes into a market thinking, I'm going to take your money and then leave afterwards. It makes them look bad and it makes the community look bad. So that's never the intention. They have to believe that that service can be sustained past the incentive period or they won't come in.
According to the Airport Authority estimates, the last numbers I saw, anyway, 45 to 50,000 local travelers to and from London each year. If those numbers are incorrect, please correct them. But those travelers, are they not spending their money in Europe? Anybody really coming from there to here investing in our economy, though?
Yeah, so it's about 30,000 passengers today that go to London. Now, Europe is higher.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
So you're right.
Europe so the combined high. Numbers.
Yep, yep, yep. Okay. So the combined numbers are actually higher than your 45,000. But there's a lot of passengers going back and forth. Yes, we have a number of folks who come over from Europe into the Pittsburgh area. We can see the point of origin. We can see where they depart from. We're still very heavily weighted Pittsburgh point of origin, about 75-80%. And that's why we're working with organizations like Visit Pittsburgh to change that, to promote Pittsburgh in these markets like London and Germany.
There were reports that Aer Lingus might get started with service from Pittsburgh to Dublin.
Yeah.
They announced today service between Dublin and Montreal, and I believe Dublin and Minnesota, not Pittsburgh. Is
right.
that still a possibility in the future?
Oh, absolutely. There's a very significant market to Dublin, a number of companies that do business over there from Pittsburgh, UPMC among them. So we have every interest in securing Dublin at some point, but we'd love to get London secured, started, successful before we bring in another European service.
Why is that?
It just makes sense. I mean, we want to put our efforts into supporting the carriers we have. WOW and Condor started at the same time, but that was Iceland and Germany, two very distinct, geographically separate markets. Dublin and London are pretty close to each other. So we would like to see BA succeed and then look at adding other service that complements it.
Okay. Recently, you went to court to sue OneJet, which began offering service from Pittsburgh in, I believe, 2015. The Airport Authority provided $1 million in incentive subsidies for service to 10 cities. For a while, was flying to 10, but it's now down to just, I think, a couple?
Zero
now. All right.
Yes.
Okay. So what are you seeking in the suit? And if you can't really talk about that litigation, have you had to go through this before for somebody not honoring their agreement?
No. And this, listen, OneJet was all about, at the time that OneJet came into the market, no airlines, the network carriers, American, Delta, United, Southwest, none of this low-cost carriers, Frontier, Allegiant, or Spirit, none of them were serving small markets, okay? So this guy comes in and says, let's go to Cincinnati and Indianapolis. Nobody else was looking at that. He came in. He proved the markets. Unfortunately, he didn't manage the airline very well. But those markets are now, I promise you, somebody else will start serving them because now that business model has been proven, it was just bad execution. It wasn't bad markets.
We have just a few minutes left, and I want to ask you about the latest in the airport renovation. But a follow-up, two Airport Authority board members have invested in OneJet. Mm-hmm. How closely are board members' investments scrutinized? What kind of rules are they asked to adhere to?
Well, listen, I can't talk about what board members do and don't invest in. What I can tell you is that everything that's happened at this airport in the last 3.5 years that's been incredibly successful has happened with this board. And they have never done anything that hasn't been in the best interest of the authority. So they fill out ethics forms. They go through a review. And, you know, that it's up to the board to figure out what they can and can't do.
Right. At some point, the airlines that we've been talking about, the new flights that we've been talking about, they'll be coming in and out of a new Pittsburgh International.
Yes.
Last September, you announced the plans for a $1.1 billion makeover.
Mm-hmm.
What's the latest? We have just a couple minutes left.
Yeah, so we have hired the architects and the engineers and the program management folks, and we're getting started on design, concept design. We're moving forward with the program. We hope to have a shovel in the ground late next year. We'll go to the bond market next year, and there's no county taxpayer money involved.
Okay. Well, that was a quick summary, but I'm going to follow up with you. You know, I remember 20-plus years ago when the first flight arrived at Pittsburgh International. So much excitement. A lot to do with the X-shaped terminal and the land side and air side, how neat that was. But it was determined we don't need a land side and air side?
We do. You do need a land side. Land side is just everything before security. What we don't need is we don't need it separated by a train.
Exactly.
We don't need two separate bag belt systems. And we don't need a terminal on four levels with roadways on both sides. What we need is we need an integrated terminal because we don't have enough TSA security checkpoint lanes. We don't have enough space. We don't have the right international arrivals processing facility transit area in order for people to come off of international flights and easily get over to the land side. And we have aging terminal infrastructure that needs to be replaced, moving walkways, escalators, elevators, etc. So we were either going to have to fix what we had or we were going to start over. And we decided that starting over and lowering the costs to the airlines was the best thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Your announcement, when which was just about a year ago,
September,
said the authority would engage key stakeholders.
Yes.
How have you been doing it? Who are these stakeholders?
It's really going to be that process will start soon, and that will be driven by our design firm, and they will be out in the community asking for input. So there will be charrettes and open houses held in order for people to weigh in. And for people to let us know sort of what is Pittsburgh, what should be represented at the terminal, what is it that we are branding as people go into and out of that terminal, knowing that people will make a decision about Pittsburgh as soon as they get to the airport, as they do today.
What about functionality, though?
Oh, yeah, sure, all of it. I mean, well, listen, we know you need... It's not that hard to figure out what an airport needs. You need a place to clear security checkpoints. You need ticketing. You need baggage. But if there's other things that people would like to see in an airport, we'd like to know that.
Okay. Just 15 seconds. So how is this getting paid for?
It's getting paid for by bonds that are backed by the airlines.
So, and it was... You know, it was the right time because paying off the bonds from the old airport.
And everybody looks at their facility every 10 to 15 years. It's time for us to look at ours.
Christina Kasotis is the CEO of the Allegheny County Airport Authority. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Thank you.
I'm Megan Harris, still ahead on The Confluence. For one new youth orchestra, steel pan drumming isn't just the instrument of choice, it's also becoming a catalyst for connection and pride in the Wilkinsburg community. And Pittsburgh isn't exactly a magnet for new immigrants choosing our city over others, but those that do find themselves here have big dreams too. Coming up on The Confluence, a conversation with a few members of a growing local group of immigrant entrepreneurs about their challenges and successes building a small business in the Pittsburgh region. Find this in every episode of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and on Twitter at @WESAConfluence.
On September 7, 1935, 19-year-old Henrietta Lever of McKeesport won the Miss America contest. 2 months later, the beauty queen found herself in an argument with local sculptor Frank Vitter. Lever was outraged to find that Vitter had rendered her image in full nudity, even though she was wearing a bikini when she posed for him. She enlisted dozens of her young peers to convince Vitter to censor the piece, but unfortunately for her, they sided with him. Years later, Lever would claim she was the reference for the torch-bearing lady in the Columbia Pictures logo, but she never had any evidence to prove that claim. I'm Mick Stinelli for the Pittsburgh Almanac.
It's The Confluence, where the news comes together. I'm Kevin Gavin. This fall, a wife and husband team will bring a unique musical experience from the Caribbean to children in Wilkinsburg. 90.5 WESA's Allegra Battle explains.
The steel pan is a musical instrument that originated in Trinidad and Tobago and was made from used oil barrels and discarded metal objects. Modern versions are made from 55-gallon industrial drums and are played widely throughout the Caribbean. The shiny silver pans are bowl-shaped. Melody and rhythm are played with mallets that hit notes indented inside the pan. The steel pan holds a special place in the heart of Lee Solomon Pugliano, who was introduced to the instrument in Guyana, South America, where she was born.
I grew up playing the steel pan, and as a young immigrant in the United States, it was something that gave me and my sisters confidence, allowed us to travel, meet different kinds of people, and helped us throughout our growth.
That growth is something she and her husband, David Pugliano, want to foster in young people in the Wilkinsburg area. She and Pugliano are the founders of the Wilkinsburg Youth Steel Orchestra, a music program they hope will provide cultural and arts education to young people.
It's a great chance to spread steel pan to another community. The benefits are really great for young people who just find confidence in playing an instrument that is very unique.
The youth orchestra will focus on the technical aspects of the steel pan, music theory, and performance.
I think anybody who finds a love for music, whether they have prior instrument experience or not, if music is something that you can connect with, this is definitely a great program for you.
Hold your mallets properly. Make sure you're standing properly. Okay? And let's start with the C major scale.
Daynira Lovings of Wilkinsburg has been attending Solomon Pugliano's pan camp for 2 summers. She says she enjoys the challenge of the instrument.
I like it because it's fun to do, and some of the songs are hard, but I get them.
Solomon Pugliano says that Wilkinsburg is the beginning of what she hopes will be a musical revival of the steel pan in the Pittsburgh area. She says traditionally, the steel pan is an instrument that traveled from neighborhood to neighborhood.
So young people throughout the Caribbean would learn the steel pan performing in a band within their community, and then those bands would grow and eventually compete at different festivals throughout the year. So we want to build that same culture here in Pittsburgh, starting with Wilkinsburg.
The Wilkinsburg Youth Steel Orchestra launches this fall. The music program is open to young people ages 12 and up who live in Wilkinsburg and surrounding areas. I'm Allegra Battle, 90.5 WESA News.
It's the confluence where the news comes together. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pittsburgh rapper Mac Miller is being remembered in his hometown after his death last week. 90.5 WESA's Katie Blackley reports that fans of the hip-hop star gathered Tuesday night at Blue Slide Park in Squirrel Hill to remember him.
Photos, paintings, and beanies were among the items scattered around the playground, named after its bright blue slide, at a vigil for Malcolm James McCormick, who went by the stage name Mac Miller. He died Friday at his home in Studio City, California, at the age of 26. The park was full of teenagers and young adults hugging and listening to live DJ sets of Miller's music. Penn Hills native Peter Ferrante says he was so inspired by the rapper that he moved to the West Coast, because that's what Miller did.
As soon as I heard Mac died, I actually packed up the car and drove across the country to this.
Miller grew up in Point Breeze and attended Winchester Thurston and Alderdice High School. He started rapping under the name Easy Mac as a teenager, before dropping the Easy and adopting his brother's first name, Miller. At 18, he signed on with the local indie label Rostrum Records, known for signing fellow Pittsburgh rapper Wiz Khalifa. Miller's debut album, Blue Slide Park, hit number one on the Billboard hip-hop charts when it was released in 2011, selling about 144,000 copies in its first week.
Blue Slide Park.
Pittsburgher Anna Reynolds was at the vigil for Miller, encouraging people to sign a petition to officially change the park's name to Mac Miller Blue Slide Park. Reynolds says, like a lot of area kids, she grew up listening to Miller's music.
You know, I felt really connected to him ever since I heard his music for the first time. It's like a friendship, and that's why I think a lot of people are here today, because they really feel like they lost a friend.
Local hip-hop DJ Selecta says he saw Miller perform in his early years in Pittsburgh, and even as a young MC, Miller made a good impression.
Everyone just said how humble and how great of a guy he was and how a genuine fan of hip-hop he was. He wanted to make an album that was truly him.
As Miller's career took off, his music evolved from traditional freestyle rap. He explored other genres, like jazz, and worked with prominent producers and artists. In 2013, Miller launched his own label, Remember Music, which was later picked up by Warner Brothers Records. He produced mixtapes for fellow hip-hop artists under the nickname Larry Fisherman, and had an MTV show called Mac Miller and the Most Dope Family. In one episode, Miller returns to Pittsburgh to talk to former Alderdice High School principal, Melissa Fries.
Keep in mind, like, who you are and stay true to who you are, because I think that's what makes you a special person.
Thank you.
In May, Miller hit a power pole in San Fernando Valley and was later charged with driving under the influence. He often talked about his battles with depression, something he rapped about on his latest album released last month, Swimming. Here's an excerpt from the song, Self-Care.
Self-care, I'm treating me right. Yeah. Hell yeah, we're gonna be all right. We're gonna be all right.
Miller was reportedly found unconscious in his home Friday. His family released a statement saying he was, quote, a bright light in this world for his family, friends, and fans. DJ Selecta says Miller will be remembered as a versatile rapper, always looking to grow.
I think he'll be remembered as an artist that stuck to his musical guns and was relentless and was always motivated to do better.
At Tuesday's vigil, Miller's mixtapes played to a crowd of hundreds. Rapper Terrence Coles, who goes by the name Franchise, says he had the opportunity to tour with Miller, and it changed his life.
Beautiful dude. It's a tragedy, but his character and his soul will live on, not only through music, but through who he was as a person.
I'm Katie Blackley, 90.5 WESA News.
Pittsburgh, let me show the world just where my city at. On the map, illest city out, I guess that's just a fact. I'ma live in Rome, drink Patron and have a ball. After all, only get one life, so there's no time to stop.
You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Immigrants comprise about 3.5% of the Pittsburgh region's population, but they're much more likely to be entrepreneurs than native-born residents. We're going to discuss what's being done, what's needed to encourage that entrepreneurial spirit to benefit newcomers and the community as a whole. Kayla Nogueira Cook is a food entrepreneur originally from Brazil. Welcome to the program, Kayla.
Thank you, Kevin.
Gene Lazarevich is originally from Russia. He's been here for many years, founder of Advanced Computer and Network Corporation. Gene, welcome to you.
Thank you, Kevin.
And Kataki Desai is originally from India, was recently named the director of growth capital for 40x80, a nonprofit arm of Pittsburgh Technology Council. Kataki, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right, before we get to the broader picture of the overall impact of immigrant entrepreneurs on our area's economy and the contributions to the community of Vitale, I'd like to find out a little bit more about each of you. Gene, we're going to start with you. You didn't come to the Pittsburgh area to create a storage system. Briefly, how did that come about? How did you get here, and how did that come about?
So we came here in 1991. Yeah, I've been here 27 years, came from Moscow with my family. It was my mom, my dad, my sister, my uncles, and my grandparents. And we actually got a refugee status, and we came as refugees from Russia. At that time, there was a lot of Jews that were coming in here, on refugee status. So we came here, and I started working as a nurse's aide at UPMC, and then started going to University of Pittsburgh. And then my friend had a company in Russia, and then we started exporting technology and technology services and software and hardware. And then basically we read a paper by three Berkeley professors. They were talking about data storage and redundant array of independent disks and so forth. And then we decided to start exporting data storage equipment to Russia. And then in 1997, the Russian market, financial market collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually decided to bring him over here on an L-1 visa. So he's still here with us, our engineer. And he actually got married. He couldn't get he got the L-1 visa, but then he was rejected to basically get the permanent visa.
Right.
So luckily he got married.
All right.
That's how he stayed.
Right. And so now you got lots of customers, not in Russia, but in this country.
Right. And then we created our own brand, which is called JetStore. It's a federal trademark, and we started marketing JetStore devices here in the States, and we've been doing it for almost 25 years. Right. So we have customers like NASA and Navy and many universities, Columbia University, Carnegie Mellon University. So we ship worldwide, nationwide, and we've been doing really well. So
very good. Kayla, you are known for your Brazilian-themed food. You call yourself a chefpreneur. What do you mean by that?
So, Kevin, I came to the U.S. in 2006. I came to get married, to form my family. And then throughout the years, people saying, oh, your food tastes really good. Why don't you start selling it? And I said, well, I'm not sure. Time went by. And then about 2012, when I moved to Pittsburgh, I started selling lunches at my job. Mm-hmm. And people's like, oh my gosh, your food looks very good. Like, can you bring some food for me? And I said, sure, if you pay me. Yeah, so that's how I started. And then slowly things got a little bigger. And basically I called myself a chefpreneur because I became a chef and entrepreneur at the same time because I created the business as a chef. Like, I wasn't hired to be a chef somewhere. So that's why I call myself a chefpreneur.
Very good. Kataki. You have been an entrepreneur,
yes.
Starting a for-profit and nonprofits, I believe. But prior to your current position, you worked for a business incubator to even help, I believe, high schoolers to sort of develop that entrepreneurial spirit.
Yes.
So how does your past experience as an entrepreneur help you in your new role with information, with funding support?
So actually being an entrepreneur really makes you understand the struggles that every entrepreneur goes through. You know, when you're looking for funding, when you're considering hiring people, the fact that you could or couldn't pay, you know, make payrolls at certain months, how do you go sell your thing? If you have to pivot, you know, based on some market decisions, how do you go and pivot? And, you know, who is there to support you, right? So being in 40 by 80 as, you know, the person that's supporting entrepreneurs as part of the Tech Council's efforts, it's important to understand that side of entrepreneurs. And having done it before and having failed and having struggled myself, it's very, it's a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. And you actually had to dissolve some of your businesses?
That's correct.
Why?
So actually when I was in, so I've been here 16 years and I have a degree from Texas A&M and a degree from Carnegie Mellon. And when I was at Carnegie Mellon, I started my first company. And the thing was that I was on a student visa. When you're leaving college and you need to get a work visa or H-1B, that doesn't allow you to actually work in your own company. You can found it. But you can only passively advise in a company you founded. So I had to dissolve the company.
Oh, okay. So aside from that, I think Kataki, just what are some of the challenges that you each faced? Was there any help when you arrived, when you started trying to create your own businesses? Kayla, let's start with you.
So I started my business much later after moving to the country. I was like pretty much six years in here. But there were some help in a way. There are some institutions, like I worked a lot with SBDC, business, small business centers, like Duquesne. Then I went to Pitt with the Innovation Institute. La Dorita, the Kitchen Incubator, too. They had some workshops that helped me. Financially, not really. I was lucky enough to have an angel investor last year to help me out. But I don't have family here, so it's pretty much everything that I made.
Okay. Gene, any support when you were starting up your company?
Actually, it was very interesting. When we got here, we pretty much came here with $100 in our pockets. So it was just completely, had nothing. And when I went to the bank, it was Equibank at that time, Squirrel Hill. And I said, you know, we have basically a house that we just mortgaged, and we have a car that's basically just worth maybe $1,000 to $2,000. And
you know, so you didn't have a lot of collateral.
Yeah, it's just said, you have any collateral? And I said, well, no, we don't have much collateral. And she said, well, we can't help you. So the biggest obstacle for us was financial. We didn't have any funding to start the company, but we really wanted to start the company. So actually, 2-3 years later, I ended up borrowing money from my parents. Basically, they gave me almost everything they had. That was like about $5,000 or $10,000. Mm-hmm. And then we invested that money. And then 2-3 years later, I was able to pay it off to them. So that's really usually what happens. I guess the family helps you. So.
Kotaki, similar, different experience?
Actually, pretty different. I come from a family that made less than a dollar a day for a family of four. So we were under the poverty line living in India. So actually, there was no money. I've actually supported my mom since then. But I think the bigger issue we face, because the support we got was from friends here, friends that became family, and that's kind of why we stuck around in Pittsburgh, is we have had so much support from the people here that have become our extended family. Our bigger issue really was the visa and the immigration process. You know, when there are so many students, actually Carnegie Mellon has in like the highest number, one of the highest number of international students in the United States. I think it's number is seventh. And there are all these students that are concentrated in STEM that want to start businesses that once they leave their college degree, they cannot actually, you know, do their own business and they have to work for an employer. I think that's the big thing. The other thing is not getting your green card. So a green card allows you to actually run your own business. But there are the countries with the highest population, India, China, Mexico, they're in backlog with India having a current backlog of 150 years.
Oh.
So if you came from India today as on a visa, you would have to wait for 150 years to get a green card. That's been our problem.
All right. So I want to get your insights on sort of the broader issues about the impact on our Pittsburgh region. So early last year, there was a national launch of Map the Impact, a campaign spearheaded by New American Economy to highlight the influence and impact of immigrants in Pittsburgh, as well as 49 other metro areas. We know that immigrants are not exactly flocking to Pittsburgh. I mean, that's a reality. But one of the points that struck me from this report was that there are more than 4,400 immigrant entrepreneurs in our region, and they are 35% more likely to be entrepreneurs than native-born residents. Any insights as to why? More willing to take a risk, more difficult to get employment with a company and working for someone else? What do you think?
So I have a theory is that whenever a person leaves their own country, right, the safety of their family, their people, the kind of people that do that inherently tend to be the people that are, that make good entrepreneurs.
I agree. Yeah. Yes, because you're already taking the risk of getting out of your country. So
this is a smaller risk?
Kind of, yeah, because you're changing. I mean, depending on the way you come, like, you're changing your life.
Yes.
Like, you leave everything that you grew up with behind, like your culture, like your family and everything.
But basically, I came here when I was 18. So it's, what are you going to do? You have to, you don't want to depend on, obviously, the government programs.
Right.
So you'd basically just be in, just dumped in the water, and you just have to start, you know, basically swimming. Mm-hmm. And I went to work for EPMC, but then I realized that, you know, I wanted to start my own company. I want to be something more than just working for somebody. So I think just the drive, the way when we come in, we just want to do something more than maybe the people that were born here, because they maybe take something for granted. We just have nothing to lose. We just go for it.
So that's an extension of just that big decision to leave the native country, then? That sort of spirit?
I think it's the spirit. I think it's that internal, you know, being scrappy, you know, being resourceful, you know, being very, we come to the United States with, you know, literally starry-eyed, because it's, you know, even with all the immigration issues, the U.S. is still the most innovative country in the world, right?
Yeah.
Right, hands down. And so when we look at the United States from anywhere else in the world, it's like, that's the country I want to come to. And I'm one of the very few people from my country that is going to do whatever it takes to get there and, you know, start something, because I have that very strong sense of belief that this is a country that will appreciate my hard work and my dignity and my sense of freedom as a citizen.
Yes, I kind of agree with you at some point. I didn't want to come to the U.S. I have very strong, like, opinions on a lot of U.S. policies, and I really, like, I respect everybody. I think that here is the American dream. For me, creating that business here and taking the risk to create a business, I think was more of the belonging part. that's where I'm going to stay. I'm not going anywhere. And that's what I want to do. So I'm not going back to Brazil. So I'm going to stay here and I'm going to do what I want. So it's great, my business.
I want to talk more about that, sort of immersing yourself in the region and benefiting not just yourself, but the experiences and basically the money from your businesses that you're investing in this region, sort of that overall contribution. But that report that I mentioned, the economic contribution adds up from all these entrepreneurs. According to that Map the Impact report, the immigrant entrepreneurs paid $251.2 million in state and local taxes, $2.3 billion in spending power. That's a lot of money to invest in mm-hmm. this region, but those are dollars. What about something that's a little bit more difficult to measure? What is your take on that, about just being part of the community, enriching our overall community with your experiences, with your lives?
So I think the idea of diversity, right? When people come from different places, they bring with them the experience of that place and their life. And different lives make a culture very diverse. America has always been the melting pot of cultures. So the more cultures we have, it really enhances the perspective whenever you're going in. Even when you're doing business, you understand better, you know, where people come from in different parts of the world.
Yeah, it's like a melting pot. That's exactly it. I mean, basically, we come from all different cultures, from all different backgrounds, and then we try to melt in and just kind of be part of the society, part of the system, part of the United States. That's what it's all about.
And I think, like, the majority, not the majority, but the number of immigrants are huge. So we are here. We're not going anywhere.
country has been built by immigrants. So, yes. I mean, this is, you know, we're still going to keep coming.
And right. And we also, like, bring what, you know, parts of our culture to here, right?
Yes.
So it's not just all taking, it's also giving.
Of course. We have just 2 minutes left, unfortunately. So in that time, what in your mind is needed to support somebody is new or has been here for a little while, but thinking about starting their own business? What support is needed now, whether it's financial, moral, information, government policy? Very quickly, we'll start with Eugene, go right down the line.
Well, yeah, I think the government should be involved in helping immigrants and, you know, basically making the immigration process easier. And just like we mentioned that there's a huge backlogs right now of people coming in and trying to get into the country. You know, we just need to be kind of selective for who's coming, or maybe more professional. Or, I mean, there's obviously, we can talk about all different types of immigration policies that we have. But, you know, we definitely need to have financial support, just like I had, you know, all these issues with getting finances from the bank here in Pittsburgh and everywhere. So, and then, of course, think tanks, you know, maybe some kind of immigrant organizations or some kind of companies that will help you or something like that. So,
Kayla, about 30 seconds we have for you.
Okay. I would say more like cultural awareness in general, in a way. For example, doing business here, it may be business is business overall, but starting a business here may be a little bit different than it is in Brazil. So centers or resources that help immigrants that are coming here to understand how the American way of making business is, if it makes sense.
Right. In Kentucky, you work with trying to provide some from financial, but aside from that, is there something else that needs to be done? We have about 30 seconds.
Absolutely. So advocacy. So I work as I volunteer as part of this group called Immigration Voice, and we're actually working on a bill to remove per country caps. The great thing is removal of these per country caps will actually eliminate a lot of the abuses that are taking place in the H-1B visa program. And so it will make it much fairer, not just for immigrants, but also for American workers. So this bill, HR 392, is really important, and you know, the policy is really important.
All right. Kataki Desai, originally from India, is the director of growth capital for 40 by 80, a nonprofit arm of Pittsburgh Technology Council. Gene Lazarevich is originally from Russia, founder of Advanced Computer and Network Corporation. And Kayla Nogueira Cook is a food entrepreneur originally from Brazil. Thanks so much to all of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And the second annual All for All Summit on Entrepreneurship by Immigrants will be held tomorrow from 8 to 5 at the University Club at the University of Pittsburgh. And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. On our next program, they're trained to serve, to sniff out crimes, to protect their partners. We'll talk with Sergeant Sean Duffy about the special skills and relationships with canine officers. Today's program was engineered and produced by Kylie Kaczynski. Production assistance from Mick Stanelli. The producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.